I'm Dan Cassidy, and this is UBS's Top of the Morning. Believe it or not, the 2020 election cycle is well underway, with the vast field of Democratic candidates set to challenge the Republican incumbent President Donald Trump. This election cycle promises to yield many spirited debates about policies and issues that matter most to you and your portfolio. Joining me to set the stage for Decision 2020 and discuss the first edition of the what will be ongoing Election Watch publication series is Investment Strategist Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Justin Waring. So Justin, good morning. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Justin, Decision 2020, of course, is well underway, and the UBS Chief Investment Office and the U.S. Office of Public Policy are once again collaborating to deliver the Election Watch publication series. I know you're one of the lead contributors to that publication series. Can you begin by walking us through what readers can expect from this series of reports throughout the course of this election cycle?
Yeah, thanks again for having me. It's a little bit surreal to be starting, you know, writing about an election that's, you know, about 537 days away. But it is important to get an early start because we're going to start to see some things that some headlines and proposals that need to be put into context. As with previous elections, our primary focus is really on cutting through political rhetoric and in order to get to policy reality. And even then, we need to sift through the noise to help investors determine how policy changes might impact their portfolios and their financial plans. In terms of stakes, this is going to be a really important election. If President Trump loses badly, the Democrats could take back the White House and also build a majority in the Senate, holding on to a majority in the House. That's because of the 34 Senate seats up for re-election this year, 12 are held by Democrats and 22 held by Republicans. So the map looks a lot more favorable for Democrats this cycle. As you know, about a third of the seats are up for election every cycle. In addition to assessing electoral outcomes and policy possibilities, we'll also be exploring subjects that relate less to current issues, but instead provide valuable historical context that can be useful in analyzing the election. For example, in this edition, we look at past re-election campaigns to determine whether incumbent presidents have an advantage over challengers. In future reports, we'll be discussing topics such as the historical record of third-party candidates, the impact of population migration, and the role of registered independent voters, in addition to everyone's favorite subject, the history and future of the Electoral College.
So there's a lot in that publication to digest, Justin, so I'm looking forward to further editions. The Election Watch is always a great publication to read through. It really gives you a good sense for what to expect throughout the election cycle. So maybe let's take a pivot over to the issues, and you think about the economy, geopolitics, immigration. Which issues are most likely to surface during this election cycle, or at this time, is it too early to say?
Yeah, I think it is definitely true that all of those topics will come up and more. So in our report, we highlighted about seven broad categories that we think that these issues will fall into. So healthcare, security, commerce, environment, society, infrastructure, and public policy. And so these things cover things like the Affordable Care Act and Medicare for All, issues such as international treaties like NATO, climate change, regulation, immigration, judgeships, including the Supreme Court, I think is going to be a very politically sensitive topic and definitely a point of contention between the two parties. And then we'll also, of course, be talking about budget deficits, entitlement reform, the national debt, things that are very large, but maybe a little bit less urgent or perceived as less urgent to this election itself. It's important to remember that some issues will be prominent during the Democratic primary, but then the conversation will shift as we begin the general election. The presidential debates, once we get to the general election, will be largely dependent on who becomes the Democratic nominee. And so that's something we'll be watching very closely.
And speaking of the Democratic candidates, I think at this point we're up to 24 or so, which have announced their candidacy. What are the qualities, experiences, and policy views that will likely be required to get the nomination?
Above all, Democratic voters want a candidate who can defeat President Trump. It's also clear that they prefer a candidate who's new and different and reflects the demographic makeup of those who are active in the primary election. obviously the energy is going to shift a little bit towards electability as we get later in the primary season, but that it's really a very open contest at the moment. You know, there are some parallels to the 2016 Republican primary season, which similarly started with a very wide slate of candidates. And learning from Trump's success, there are a lot of nominees who have adopted the outsider mantle, trying to take advantage of voters' frustration with the status quo. None of the candidates is a direct mirror of then candidate Trump, but we do suspect that voters will definitely consider a candidate with a combative style to best challenge him during the general election.
So as you indicated, Justin, President Trump is running for his second term, and I believe you took a look at the report to see previous presidents' reelection campaigns to see if they have an advantage over challengers. So what does the historical record, so to speak, tell us about that?
Yeah, so it's very interesting. History tells us that incumbent presidents tend to do very well. In the history of the U.S., there have been 32 elections where an incumbent president ran as a candidate. 22 of those resulted in re-election. So that's about a 70% win rate. Of course, every election is unique. And if we exclude a lot of the earlier contests and just look at elections after 1948, there have been 11 elections with an incumbent running, and 8 have ended in re-election. So even a little bit better of a win rate. There's a couple reasons that you can think of to explain the incumbency advantage. First and foremost, there's a type of survivorship bias, because incumbent presidents are only likely to run for re-election if they're confident that they can win. For example, Lyndon B. Johnson opted not to seek re-election in 1968 because of opposition to the Vietnam War. There's also literal survivorship bias, because 5 presidents died during their first terms. In addition, you know, incumbents have name recognition and an existing fundraising machine, and they rarely face a stiff primary challenge. This means they get to escape the often bruising and very costly experience of a challenging primary process, and they can sort of hit the ground running from day one campaigning for the general election.
As you alluded to, Justin, we have quite a lot of runway ahead of us prior to going into the voting booths and casting our votes. What comes next here?
So in our reports, we're going to outline the full timeline from today through Election Day. The first big electoral event is a pair of Democratic debates that are scheduled for the 26th and 27th of June in Miami. Even though this will be broken into 2 events to fit the nominees, it still won't be enough space for everyone. And so the Democratic National Committee is hoping to use polling data and some other inputs to winnow down the candidates to a lean slate of just 20 candidates for each event. For both events in total, 10 at each event. We'll be on our side publishing our next edition of Election Watch in the weeks before that event, and also tying U.S. politics into other subjects that come up. For example, today we published our House View weekly regional view, looking at how partisan politics might play into the U.S.-China trade negotiations. And to stay on top of all of our coverage across all of our reports, make sure you visit ubs.com/electionwatch and talk to your financial advisor to understand how these issues impact your family's portfolio and plan, and more importantly, when they don't, because obviously politics is entertaining, but not always directly impactful to our lives.
Well, I was joking with Shane Lieberman on the Washington Weekly podcast on Friday. You mentioned they're breaking up the debates because you simply can't fit all of those candidates on one stage. Otherwise, it would be one for the Guinness books.
I think there would be a lot more than 24 if it didn't cost anything to run.
I would say so as well. But Justin, really appreciate you coming by and kind of setting the stage, so to speak, for this, what will be an ongoing Election Watch publication series. Really looking forward to seeing and reading about what the Chief Investment Office and the U.S. Office of Public Policy puts out there, and we'll continue to keep our listeners informed along the way on Top of the Morning, as well as our sister podcast, The Washington Weekly, as well. But Justin, appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And again, we have been joined by Investment Strategist Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Justin Waring. So as we indicated, the inaugural edition of the Election Watch which is titled Looking Ahead to the 2020 Elections, is now available up on UBS Online Services, as well as on the dedicated website, which is ubs.com/ElectionWatch. If you are a client of UBS, be sure to reach out to your financial advisor. They can directly provide you with a copy of this Election Watch publication. Top of the Morning, we'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.